Today's episode of the Filmmaker Toolkit podcast is brought to you by Reality. For your awards consideration, Max presents the HBO original Reality, starring Sydney Sweeney, and based on the true story of former American intelligence whistleblower Reality winner. Don't miss the film IndieWire calls gripping and layered, Emmy eligible for Outstanding Television Movie and in all other categories. Hi, and welcome to IndieWire's Filmmaker Toolkit podcast. I'm Chris O'Fall, executive editor of Craft and Special Projects. And this is going to be our final Emmy-focused episode until after nominations are announced. And for this episode, we're welcoming Random Acts of Flyness creator and star Terrence Nance. Neither season two of the series nor Terrence are getting a ton of Emmy buzz, and that's a huge shame because this is easily one of the most innovative and exciting pieces of filmmaking I saw on TV this last year. One quick disclaimer that we want to make clear here, this interview was conducted many, many weeks ago, well before the writer's strike. Don't get mad at Terrence. He's not out doing FYC promo, you know, with the writers out on strike. I really want to dig into season two, which I found amazing, but I never got a chance to talk to you about season one. And I just think as a grounding element, maybe could you just say kind of briefly, and I realize it's not an easy thing to do, but kind of the, in terms of this format and the conception of the show, I mean, it's labeled sketch. You know, it has some roots, obviously, in some late night cable access. But in terms of the format itself, I mean, obviously, it seems to be in conversation with our current media landscape. I'm wondering if you could kind of talk about that in terms of the original conception of Random Acts.
Yeah, of course. The original conception came from an idea my brother Nelson and I had. He said that we should try and convince TV1 to let us take over their midnight programming because, you know, at that time, early mid-2000s, TV1 was mostly just syndicated black sitcoms. And, you know, in our young minds, we thought that we could essentially, you know, deploy whatever we wanted to after midnight. And I don't think that our conception of it was solidly within the kind of formal framework of any pre-existing thing, you know, like you said, sketch or variety show or a sitcom or anything like that. But at that time it was, we thought of it as a place where, you know, we could express ourselves in cinema around a theme. I think that what the show became, which was very much sort of answering of the call of Tamir Muhammad, our EP, when he asked me essentially, what would I do with a news show? You know, I told him I wouldn't make a news show, but I had this other idea. But I think that sort of part and parcel to that ask or that prompt was, you know, what is people like you's take on what's happening in the world in this moment, you know? And I think that, you know, ultimately my take and our take, you know, was a expression of our relationship to the language of cinema, which I think, you know, for me, fractals out into just different obsessions with different modes of making, most specifically, I think, music, fables, animation. Specifically like animation that is designed to, like, you know, speak to the more kind of child like aesthetic tastes that we all kind of have somewhere in us. And, you know, being in the flow of ourselves and our obsession with those modes of making when, you know, essentially just processing the world. And I also think that at that time I was really committed to channeling as a practice of cinema, you know. At the time I would have called it making things from my subconscious, but I think this, the idea of the subconscious doesn't hold water for me. I think it was more about tapping into what messages felt useful coming from the creator, and knowing that what I need to do is like be around other people who have that same intention, you know, to channel from those same sources. And I think that was the original sort of thinking of the first season, for sure. And, you know, like all things that involve a company, you know, I had to get translated as essentially a way of like explaining it to, you know, HBO, and even before HBO, kind of at the time, like kind of pitching it to other networks. I think in that explanation, the terms variety and sketch were thrown around essentially for lack of a better term. But I think that the term that we used internally and even in some of the marketing forms was a concept album, you know, because, you know, the tradition, the cinema making tradition, the way of organizing time-based media that was guiding us was the tradition of the concept album. You know, obviously moving through hip hop, or, you know, like in that contemporary moment, you know, I See at the Table had just come out, Damn had just come out, or I think Pacific Butterfly had just come out, but, you know, and how those are referencing, you know, De La Soul is Dead, or, you know, all the Funkadelic albums, you know, thinking of the album as a story telling space where you're bringing in more than songs, you know. And I think that's what we were in the tradition of.
And from that sense, if you want to do a new season, you could always do a new album, which doesn't have to have, as an artist, it could be any, you know, because it's, everything is so playful with cinema and finding its own expression here. And you know, obviously you're in a different headspace. Would you make this about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? I don't know. But I mean, obviously you were in a different place. But the thing that is so fascinating to me about this season, which is, you know, to be reductive, is about healing and ritual, is so much of what you're getting at is concepts. And, you know, there's an ephemeral spiritual element. There's very philosophical, spiritual ideas here. Things that are like, you know, hard to even put into words, and a journey to reach that. And it strikes me that so much of what is great about the season, but I also have to imagine the challenge was how to get at some of these things, some of these feelings, some of these emotions, that in almost in a little bit more of a narrative form with your character and Naj, right?
Absolutely. You know, that fable became the most useful way of sort of reintroducing those themes you talked about to the consciousness of ourselves and our audience. You know, it became the container, and maybe most specifically, a story about two characters who are finding their own initiations imperfectly while trying to figure out or imagine a way of loving each other that they haven't seen before in culture or in, you know, the sort of standard decorum of relationships, you know, be they romantic, artistic, etc. And I think that story, you know, just requires some space. You know, whereas maybe in the first season you get a bit of that story, but it, you know, from a real estate perspective, it doesn't take that much of the season. And I think just knowing it needed space to be told just kind of created a mandate for, you know, engaging that way of storytelling in a more serialized way that, you know, kind of focused on the spine of the story that fractals out in the way that we like to do that. And I think, you know, on some level, kind of what you're speaking to about those elements, ritual, healing, grief, I think just transmutation of the energy of grief and mourning into, and pain and trauma into a lesson, you know, that can sort of build your character or refine your character. I think the raw material of that archetypal story are the emotions that one confronts along the way, you know, and they're in all stories, you know, like to use an extremely pop culture example, you know what I mean? Like the Avengers movies by Infinity War become about grief, you know, the new Black Panther is about grief, you know, and about ancestry. So I think that the biggest stories are always at their root rudiments about things that, you know, these emotions that are necessary to unpack. And I think the intervention of Random Acts this season is to most explicitly bring up how Black people are finding rituals of our ancestors, specifically, you know, the indigenous communities and peoples and those ways that are in our blood, essentially, but that we have no access to, or have been barred from by law, you know, until our parents' generation, essentially. And how, when engaging grief, for instance, you know, we got to do it another way. You know, when engaging the initiation rites of, you know, going from being a child to an adult, or going from being an adult to an elder, or an elder to an ancestor, you know, we need to find another way than the way we've been taught. You know, the elder to ancestor ritual of Western culture is hospice. You know, that's not what I'm aspiring to, or we are aspiring to. We're trying to find and imagine the ways that are in our blood that we can build upon as rituals, for instance, as an example. I think that that's what the show is about.
In terms of process, I think there was a collection of about 7 writers. I don't remember exactly, but it seems about right in terms of the names. I just rewatched part of this season. I'm sure it's not traditional, but is there was a kind of sit in a room, you know, you have the structure of this dimensions. I mean, was it that type of writer's room type thing of an experience of sitting here? Here's an idea. Let's break it. Or was it a little bit different? Because I have to imagine season one was a little bit different. It also had a large collection of writers, but it was a different exercise.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think one of the main differences, like everybody, was that season two was on Zoom and season one was in person. With season two, it was a lot different because, you know, we didn't have the pilot. In season one, you know, we had the pilot. So it was like, you know, make more of this, you know, essentially. And it's breakdownable. You know, you can kind of imagine how to continue it.
And the thing about that format that was so nice was that because it was so thematically linked and also had a certain playfulness that was established, so it had like an organic whole, it also had these things where pieces could fit together, I imagine. You know, this goes with this, that goes with which is a little different than the Naj Terrence arc, you know, in terms of how the pieces are fitting together to a certain degree too.
Yeah, it was definitely a different challenge. And, you know, I definitely obeyed from what I understand. I've never been in another writer's room, but from what I understand of writer's rooms, you know, I obviously did a bunch of sort of imagination beforehand. And, you know, I had a concept that was the parable of the pirate and the king. And, you know, I had a sketch of a way forward for Naja and Terrence's relationship as it was left off in season one. And, you know, I had a sketch of like some of the just energies and, you know, that are in the show that felt like they were just present and wanted to come through. And I presented the, you know, like the first week or two is just me presenting those things to everybody and like talking about them, you know, which I think is pretty standard, you know, in terms of just like, you know, when you're a show creator, you know, you kind of come with a bag of tricks. And I think that because it was a really short room and it was on Zoom, it was only 13 weeks, you know, we had to work really fast to try and shape those ideas into, you know, a story. And, you know, because so much of what I was bringing forth had come from essentially a reading list that I had put together, it kind of felt a little bit like a classroom, you know, like where we were all bringing in sort of different things we had read or thought about to just unpack, you know, how they could inform the story. And I think that, you know, obviously one of the biggest things that informed the story in terms of a text was Maladoma Somme of Water and the Spirit, and his other books as well. And, you know, what his story tells us about, you know, Black people coming back to ritual. But yeah, ultimately it was 13 weeks, which, you know, at the end of that, because it was so short and it was on Zoom, we didn't totally finish it. But, you know, I was able to, like, you know, kind of have some more time to finish it because of COVID. You know what I mean? Just sort of getting it done. But, and I think it kind of made it feel, it was, that was very different than season one, whereas, you know, that we sort of were, the moment the writers' room ended, we were shooting in season one. Season two was a lot of time to make myself crazy revising things.
I have to imagine one of the big challenges here and is considering these ideas, but also, you know, you brought up some modern movies that dealt with grief and trauma, you know, but I mean, the king does die, you know, in Black Panther 2. You know, it's like there's a very specific narrative thing here, whereas both their individual ancestry, but also, you know, obviously the history is, you could go on forever, you know, but also some of these ideas. There's a thing here where maybe it's easiest to think about it in terms of an example or something, but where the line is between explaining the idea or, you know, towards the end, I know you start playing with the Khalil Joseph's Black News a little bit there, you know, but I mean, that idea of when you're dealing with something that is as complex as this, when you're going to give them the thought spelled out or the parable spelled out as you do in episode 5 or as in 5 and 6, the history, you know, with Liberia versus in the beginning where it's, you're trusting your audience to be kind of floating with these two and to, cause it's hard when anybody's on a spiritual journey, it's more about the interruptions, you know, it's about, you know, cause of the conflict is you can't get there. So you're capturing it. It's again, so much of that seems to be solved with filmmaking, but I have to imagine that's a big conversation of where, with all these ideas in the room of how those are going to be expressed or shown. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that density was a big sort of consideration, you know, like how much, you know, we call them sequiturs often, you know, when the show would kind of go into explaining Liberian history, you know, for instance, or, you know,
because I've been in that room thing. And there's a reason I wasn't in that room. And I said, you're just going to go, we're going to go into the history lesson. You know, it's just like, which just feels like a detour. It works. Don't get me wrong. But I think I would have been sitting there as a fly along. Going, I don't know if that's going to, you know, after all that. Yeah.
I think on some level there was, you know, just the architecture of the first season that sort of helps us, you know, find a way of telling the story that isn't, about symbols all the time. You know, I think so much of cinema and the beauty of it and pictorial storytelling generally is about finding metaphors and symbols, you know, to encapsulate information. And I think when the people who are best at it have a kind of way of doing it with like a sleight of hand, you don't even notice that they're doing it, you know. And I think that a big teaching of Maladoma is like the limitations of language. Spoken language is a symbolic exercise, sort of symbolic kind of mental and spiritual exercise. And so it's some way kind of like that the one of the ethos of the show is to like engage with symbols less reliably in that way. I think it kind of allows us, you know, to go into these sort of sequiturs that are more about acknowledging the materiality of this thing as TV, as a TV show that's on a channel, you know, and that's a sort of precarious, strange, you know, difficult sort of modality of production, and especially modality of deploying this particular consciousness shift, which is to bring people back to ritual, you know? And I think that was even in the first season in a way without us knowing that, but I think it created that, you know, those sort of pieces of tapestry that allow for even those moments to be ecstatic in a way, you know, and not to feel maybe what the fear would be, which is like didactic or weigh you down with information as opposed to feeling.
One thing I loved, there's a bunch of things I loved here, but the app and the bitch you better get my money, but also the language of that is, you know, so much of what interrupts our daily lives, and it's already interrupted my daily life, like in the last 24 hours, and any sense of peace or meditation I've had has been interrupted by that goddamn iPhone, you know, and it's, but also the way that also even extends with the Terrence character of when anger sets in and the kind of language of that in cinema of that, it feels like that was something, I know that was present of the modern world in our interrupting, but it feels like that, those devices and the way that you had language and sound and then extended that to kind of the internal emotions, it feels like those were big things to kind of almost have a shorthand, and instead of being a symbol, being like getting the audience to feel that registry instantly of what that's like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that a tool is a tool, you know what I mean? Like, you can use a hammer to build a house or, you know, hurt yourself. You know, it's just like, it can go either way. And I think just the phone, but maybe more broadly, just like modern technology, it's the same thing, you know? It requires a precise intention so that it doesn't become an instrument of destruction, you know? to your point, even just the destruction of your time, your free time, or your, you know, just sort of like having a open headspace, you know? And so I think that, like, you know, so part of, the show is like seeing characters sort of just interrogate the modern world, how much use it has, like what's useful about these tools that are all around us and what's not, you know, even to the, sometimes those tools aren't even like material, you know, sometimes like I think a big sort of thing that's happening in the story is how they're interacting with bureaucracy, you know, and archives, you know, data, you know, through the app, you know, or, and you know, that kind of like government, like how they're interacting with, you know, those kind of technologies, you know, certain aspects of this sort of modernism that in some moment they're kind of like, oh, this is what's going to give me my money. This is what's going to give me some stability. And then in other aspects they're like, you know, These are the logistics that are going to destroy us, you know, ultimately. If anything, they'll take our time.
One thing about the season that is just remarkable is the spaces, the locations, the interiors. I mean, they're gorgeous, but I mean, beyond that, and they're beautifully shot, but there's something, the care that went into a space in terms of a mind thought, in terms of where we are with these characters and spiritually, I hear you talking about this being a little bit of a rush, but that part had to be something, I don't know, maybe even they were conceived with spaces in mind. I'm wondering if you could talk about that, because they're all, I mean, obviously towards you get to the end, you get down to the plantation, there's a trip down to the mother's house and stuff, but I'm talking about even just, you know, all right from the beginning in their lives in the city.
Yeah. I mean, everything's very dialed in. I think mostly because, you know, just to shout her out, Nora, our production designer, was tapped into the intention of the characters and like, you know, how they're negotiating being inside, you know, being in buildings, like in a boardroom versus being on the earth and being outside, you know, and that's the story, you know, like that's a lot of where the storytelling is happening. It's like how they're having to react to the energy in places, you know, that's not spoken, you know, there's like a line in there in episode 2, Gerald leaves Terrence a voice note and says, I had to get out of that Airbnb because the energy is wild in there, you know. And you know, that kind of comes after you see just how wild there's an entity in there, there's an energy there. And,
these rooms have energy to them. They're not just that. They just, And that energy is so related to what's happening in the scene, or even juxtaposed to it. It's remarkable how much that's there and present. It's funny because I remember that line did strike me because it's like, whoa, the energy's wild in this room. I can see, it's like.
Yeah, I mean, I think she told the story of the expansion of the characters outside of those spaces over the course of the 6 episodes, because it's an intrepid journey through spaces and through countries, but like ultimately she found a way for that to feel more about like the journey of their consciousnesses as a kind of remote control of those spaces. There's a lot of, we use the imagery, a lot of the walls falling away, Naj and Terrence get to kind of disembodied moments of creativity or come into contact with the creator, the divine, who we call OG. And I think that is indicative, or we're illustrating, and the spaces are illustrating that everything around us is both here and not here. You know what I mean? It's like that reality. And, there's a way to experience it as here and also experience it as not here.
I want to also talk about Sean Peters, because much like the discussion we just had with the spaces, it's hard for me to imagine, even as remarkable as some of the filmmaking is and the performances, the cradle and the kind of that's given with these images, these blacks, there's just such a distinct feel to how this is that it's remarkable work, but it also feels like a collaborator who's just so in connection with what you're doing in ways that maybe not are not verbal. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure you watch your work be elevated daily there.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously Sean is foundational to my own, practice of making cinema.
How so? Have you been that? This is just a longtime collaborator.
Yeah, we've been working to everything I've made, basically, mm-hmm. I've made with him, and it does become intuitive and energetic. Like our dialogue, our process of refinement, definitely moves outside of language. And many of Sean's collaborators and friends, and even himself, describe. His process is emotional first. He's painting emotions. He's using light and color to paint emotions, literally. And that is a science, or it is a practice, maybe more than a science, because it requires observing how certain tonalities of light and color and skin tones and compositions make you feel. And like, in order to dial into that, you have to really be in touch with how you feel, which is not a given. And I think it's a privilege for me to be with somebody whose imagination is sourced in their feeling and the palette of their feeling, the wide palette of their feeling. Because we've worked together so long, I've seen him change as a person, And he's seen me change. So much of like the stories we're telling are a result of the lives we're living, and the lives we're living are together, like we live down the street from each other, it's a real thing. So, the work, Random Acts, nothing I do would be what it is without that witnessing, of each other, growth.
This might seem like a non sequitur, but it feels to me like this might be a little bit related in terms of the direction of your own art is Swarm, this show that's going on. I haven't gotten down to Philly to check it out, but I know it is again, it's not just filmmaking, it's you can explain it yourself, but it also, my understanding of it is, it's also a little bit of a celebration of the collaborations from 10 years of your life and a sense of community in filmmaking, which I get the sense of that's very much baked into this season 2 as well. I don't know, maybe I'm making a leap here, but it just feels, I was reading about it this morning and it felt like maybe there is a connective tissue between what we're talking about here and that show.
No, absolutely. It is that. Swarm is that.
Oh, to be clear, guys, Swarm is not the Amazon Prime thing. It's not the Donald Glover's project with Dominique Fishback. Dominique Fishback, who was in season one, but no, not that.
Yes, this is a Swarm. You know, the art show, the art exhibition. I was asked to do it by Mary Holmes, is the curator, and who's another collaborator who I've just been supported by and worked with so many years, mainly her role as like curator and founder of Black Star Film Festival, Black Star Projects. And, you know, just it came out of it. And the reason she chose the title Swarm is because, you know, for those 10 years, I would always refer to our community of people, you know, making things as the swarm or a swarm. As a kind of demographic marker, and one that the way I would use it was in hopefully an unromantic way, you know, because I started to notice that there were deeply unsustainable realities about our togetherness, you know, mainly just resources and money. And also like what I noticed, you know, was a little bit of a rift or a divide or an inability to tap into different generations. You know, it didn't feel like the swarm, as I used to sort of refer to us as, had a real way of communing with elders and with children. You know what I mean? Felt kind of like modern generation. But at the same time, you know, we are able to get a lot of things done. And in my formulation, my understanding of what Swarm was sort of a demographic marker of a certain type of person that found themselves in a city, you know, amongst a certain type of, you know, creative, educational, academic, nonprofit-y, you know, modality, social modality. And that, you know, those people were just in a different social demographic sphere than, you know, the people who work in the medical industry, people who work in the financial industry. And we didn't cross that much. I think that there's a big celebration with also just like a tinge of like critique or commentary on just like the sustainability of us as a community, you know, for just reasons, lots of reasons, you know.
Well, it, you know, it's hard for me not to think of the presence of Artha Jaffa and appears throughout these. And I watched your, it's a while ago, but I watched your conversation with George Tate on the Criterion Channel. I'm sorry, what did I say? Oh, I apologize, Greg Tate, yes. And the recently passed away. But this, it feels like in not only a commonality of language, but a searching for language, a searching for, you know, we so often talk about Black cinema in terms of Hollywood or in terms of its place in or in out of, but it feels as if you're part of a group that is striving to find a language in terms of form and in terms of the stories. And that's what's exciting to me about Random Acts, is that it feels like it's not intentionally trying to push boundaries. It's trying to find a language that maybe we're used to in terms of an HBO or in terms of, I mean, you had your own experience with Space Jam and Hollywood filmmaking, but that seems what's always so exciting to me about that show is it. And I kind of want to go down to Philly to see the thing, to see your thing, because it feels as if that's striving for some kind of language or a form of expression using maybe music, filmmaking, all the different tools.
Yeah, I think it's maybe witnessing a language as opposed to maybe striving for it, because it just is. And I think what, you know, AJ would say a lot, and I feel like a lot of people, you know, he's thinking with would say, is that it just all comes out of sociality. It comes out of just being together. And, you know, there's conditions that enable or disable being together in different types of ways. And I think that that's what we're thinking about. What I'm thinking about for sure is just like, how can we be together and refine what being together is so that it is sustainable, and so we hurt each other less, you know, or we have this like more useful and sustainable modalities of repair when we do hurt each other, or we could just make it more fly when we celebrate each other and everything in between. And, you know, just to figure out how to be together is just such a paradox. You know, it's so easeful. It's such a fact of life. But it also is so charged with resistance in so many modes, you know. And a lot of those resistances, you know, maybe to speak to the show, just coming through us like an energy, you know, coming from our ancestors or our condition. You know, if you think about just Najee Terrence trying to be together, trying to make work together, a lot of the reasons that are getting in the way are like stories that they're telling themselves that are rooted in things, expectations, dispossessions that happened to their ancestors, you know, and only marginally maybe happened to them. So that's what happens, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and I think that the language, like what you end up seeing as like the style, the vibe, the aesthetic of like how some of the movies and the music come out, you know, the way they're cut, you know, the way that the music works within them, it's just what happens when we're together having certain types of conversations, you know.
I do. I couldn't find it this morning, but I remember seeing, I don't know if it was something I saw or read with you off season one. You've continued to have this role editing, and you're directing. I think you directed less of season two than season one, but there's, you know, doing the music, doing the editing. And there was something about, like, we think of HBO as having all these resources. And I just remember the story from season one. It's like something where it felt like you were cobbling together favors and trying to find like all these different, almost like you would, the way you were describing the production felt like more of like a graduate student film than HBO. I'm curious in terms of, you know, your role as lead creator here. You know, you're obviously the actor, the force behind the camera as well, and also editing into post. I'm wondering about how those collaborations or your role maybe changed in season two, or is it that same, you know, everything is through you to a certain degree, and from beginning to end.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely the same in season two in that sense, you know, wearing all the hats necessarily, to your point. But also, because that's, you know, my practice, I think the difference in season two with directing is I had just a way bigger load to bite off as an actor. And it was just really clear that, you know, the acting would be better serviced, you know, with the opportunity to work with, you know, directors in a more one director per episode kind of way. And I think it also just allowed for, you know, me to live my dream of like working with my friends in that way. And you know, going for each episode, having a voice directorially, which kind of both happened and did it in a way, because it's the nature of like the TV production process, you know, the directors, unless you just have a lot of money, can't really be a part of post in the way that they would be on, you know, maybe a film and directing. But I think even with that, you know, our directors were still able to, you know, really put their stamp on their episodes. You know, even with that difficulty, that challenge. And, you know, yeah, we're definitely the most modestly resourced, I would definitely, HBO show ever made, period, point blank, period. Don't let anybody tell you different. And probably the most modestly resourced television show ever in the history of network television. And so it felt like that. You know, theoretically, the trade-off is that it's super different because there's a There's nothing at risk, resource wise. But you know, I think that ultimately, it needs to be refined, you know, as a process of resources being committed to make a story that, that's aspiration is to concept cinema as a healing modality that is deeply engaging and emotional in the way that acknowledges that anybody can connect to it, you know, because everybody's grieving. Everybody got a mama that might be lying to them or not. Everybody is, you know, going through a relationship with somebody who is coming for their neck on a day-to-day basis also as their main support system. Like the things that are going on the show are what everybody's gone through, you know? And, you know, the thing that the show should do, and I hope it does, is make viable that kind of both and, you know, that it could evolve the language of cinema and do something visually, sonically, you know, just in terms of expression that you haven't seen before, but work with the same rudiments that all stories are working with and thus pull in all people.
This show was made, this second season was made post your Space Jam experience. And then after this, I follow you on Instagram. You're doing a lot of music right now. And then you have the show in Philly. I'm curious, I was reading something. You had a lot of aspirations of, yes, you do like to work in some of these different modes and interdisciplinary and, you know, but also maybe, I don't want to say non-narrative, but obviously Random Acts is on a certain part of the spectrum of narrative storytelling. I don't want to lock you into anything, but do you see yourself trying to go back I hate saying mainstream, but you know, something that would be of part of the economic system of Hollywood and that mode of storytelling? Because you seem to be really excited about the fact that you could bring something to that. When I was reading interviews with you like 3 years ago.
I'm offering my medicine, you know, and it's for the world. You know, it's not for a segment of the world in that sense. There's that. And then there's also, you know, I do recognize that, you know, there's a few metaphors for it, but, you know, like there are people, there are artists, there are cinema makers who, when you see what they're making, you know, their intervention is on the thing you see, you know, like if it was like a website, it's on the website itself. You know what I mean? And then there's people who are, their intervention is like, you go to view source on the website on the code level of it. You know what I mean? And then there's people's intervention is like on the actual concept of what the code even is, you know? There's people who are like, oh, in order to do this, I need to make a new language. I need to make Python. I need to make Ajax. You know, those didn't exist before. It's not going to work with C++, you know? And I do recognize that my intervention is at that level, you know, that mostly I'm looking at the whole language and knowing that if I'm to get to a level of transcendent cinema that's going to excite me, get me out of my seat, then I need a different language to write it in a certain way. And I think that is because the language of cinema is very, you know, a lot of movies are still written in binary. They're still written in ones and zeros, you know? And, you know, or to use the food metaphor, a lot of stuff is just written with just good old wheat and some beef and some cheese, you know? And, you know, ultimately, you know, you gotta, I have to understand and just have some level of self-awareness that, you know, it takes a little longer sometimes to write the language that you're going to, you know, make the thing in, write the source, and then write the source code from there. And, you know, ultimately, there are industrial machinations that, you know, we're in an industry, so I say this a lot, you know, industries have just idiosyncrasies that make them industry. One being the assembly line, you know, the assembly line's point is so that, you know, kind of homeostasis, like you really, the 2024 Camry really should not be all that different than 2023 Camry. Otherwise people would be like, where's my Camry? You know what I mean? And that's, it's set up for that level of replicability. You know what I mean? And essentially, you know, the industrialization of cinema has always been there. It's always been a part of what it is. So if I'm trying to make a concept car, you know what I mean, that like really patterns a new way of making engines, you know what I mean, then it's not going to come out every year in that sense. But it requires, you know, just respect, you know, from Toyota, for instance, that like the lessons learned in making that concept car got to really make the Camry way better, you know, way more interesting to sit in. And so, yeah, I think that I'm really focused on how an industrial process can be, we can acknowledge that when you're not making the Camry, you got to do stuff like take it off. We can't do the assembly line thing. The process has to be very different. And there are filmmakers out there who are a different process, you know, that the industry creates an accommodation for a difference in their process so they can get to a different result. We all know their names. They're mostly, you know, white guys in their 40s and 50s who are amazing, you know, last names are Anderson Fincher and 70s. Yeah.
And now they're starting to be with the baby boomers. It's also 70s and 80s,
exactly, you know? Exactly. So I think that there's imperative that, you know, essentially us who are the new blood, essentially, you know, are accommodated in the difference in our processes, so that especially the differences that make it not industrial.
I look forward to one day seeing your 2024 Camry because I don't want to get into it because I could see in this season, it's one of many things here, but I could see you in conversation with yourself about some of these processes and experiences that you just had. I mean, there's a large bunny, I think the thing, and we'll just leave it here it sounds hard to make the leap from one thing, but to express so clearly some of the abstract emotions, and you were describing, you know, I don't have the ancestral wounds that you have and your fellow creators have, but I mean, to feel, I could feel spiritual journey. I could feel interruption to spiritual journey. And it was so clear, even sometimes where I didn't know where I was. You know, or, you know, and sometimes your dimension thing goes over my head. I don't have a strong enough IQ sometimes to spatially understand, but I the ability to translate that so clearly, and make space for the audience to feel these things. I think it would be a wonderful thing to find. I have no doubt you could bring it to something, get it off the assembly line and do it. You know, but I'll also will continue to listen to your music and going to your, although I got to figure out how I'm going to get out to Philly this spring, but I'd like to see that. So, do we know yet if there's going to be another season of Random Acts? I apologize for not knowing.
No, we don't. We don't know.
Oh, okay. And by we, you don't.
So, I don't think anyone knows.
Do you want to do another one?
You know, I want to see what happens, you know? I want to see what's on the next level, you know, ultimately. I don't know, you know, I don't know what's on the next level.
All right. Well, if people haven't seen it, you should check it out. It's awesome. And, thank you for making time today.
Oh yeah, no problem.